Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
Welcome to CRE Radio. We're going to have a great show. Today, the show is entitled The Backbone of Retail Real Estate Logistics and Getting the Product to the Consumer. Our special guest is Chris Bjornson, International Director of Retail E-Commerce and Distribution at Jones Lang LaSalle. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Howard. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Super. Well, I had interviewed Chris at Recon this year, and he started talking about logistics, and I had no clue what logistics was about. And in further conversations and research with Chris, I began to realize that logistics, as it relates to retail real estate, is so very, very important. And one of the things that we're going to express today is that in many instances in today's day and age, it's logistics that drives real estate versus real estate driving the logistics. And we'll get more into that. So, Chris, before we go on any further, let me let everybody know that we have a call-in number, which is 619-393-6492. That's 619-393-6492. Press 1 to get into the queue where you can ask questions or leave comments. You can also leave comments for us on Twitter. I will be monitoring our Twitter line. So anytime that you want to put up comments, please do so. And we can also have a conversation on Twitter. That includes even after we're finished with the live show. Also, if you'd like to leave comments on our website, please go to creradio.com/logistics. So, Chris, let's start out with a 30-second description of what it is that you do for Jones Lang LaSalle.
Yeah, so I head our global retail e-commerce distribution business. So that business is really focused, just as you said, really on the backbone of the retailers, which is the distribution real estate that's serving the retailers. So, you know, everything from warehouses to distribution centers to e-commerce fulfillment centers, you know, globally. So we're focusing on supply chain strategy to location selection strategy to real estate development and everything in between on how best to support the retail industry with those, you know, those initiatives.
So let's delve into a little deeper into the subject. What do we mean by logistics in the context of commercial retail real estate?
No, so logistics on commercial, when we say commercial retail, you know, we're first starting back, you know, let's take back, you know, off the back door of the retail facility that, you know, that would go back into the industrial real estate, which where the distribution center would lie. And so that would, you know, impact the industrial real estate side of that. Slowly, as we're evolving, as retail real estate is trending into some parts of industrial real estate, you know, now, as we're seeing in today's new economy, you know, logistics is impacting retail real estate, where more of the store is becoming returns and pickups and sorting and packaging, you know, and you're having more what I would call logistics functions happening at the store. So you're seeing some of my world that I've lived in over the last 20 years happening right there at the retail real estate center right there.
Isn't it all about getting the product into the customer's hands?
It is. It is, and that's been the evolution, and that's why it's moved away, and when you say backbone, and that's why it's becoming so visible today. 20 years ago, you would never had a clue on where that product would have ever come from. And today it's becoming very visible. You know, you, the consumer, can go online and watch it sometimes and say, this is where it's left, and this is where it's coming, and this is where it's at en route, and this is how it's arrived. This is where it's at in the store. I mean, you can find all of that, you know, on different mobile apps. You can find all of that. And so it's very transparent. It's very visible to you, the consumer, now. So, you know, it's beyond the backbone right now. It's, you know, probably the skin. You know, the logistics is even the skin of, you know, the transparency of, you know, how you, the consumer, receive it.
Well, if we're talking about how we get the product, the retailer gets the product into the customer's hands, we all know that the internet has changed retailing forever, but there are roots from the internet in terms of logistics, because you go back into the 19th century and Sears mail order was the precursor, I think, for internet in terms of getting it into the end user's hands. No, how has the internet changed things in that way from the perspective of logistics, getting it into the customer's hands?
You know, I think all of that is, you know, as I said, visibility. You know, visibility creates expectations. Expectations create speed. So, you know, you come back to the Sears, you know, catalog example. I mean, that was, we'll get it to you next month. You know, that came into, that evolved into the Postal Service mail order fulfillment model that says we'll get it to you in 3 to 5 days. You know, today we've evolved to the same day model, which says how can you get it to me in 2 to 3 hours? So, I mean, that's the evolution of speed. In the logistics world, you know, it's moved to that speed. So you can't necessarily set up your logistics or your retail distribution centers in the middle of nowhere, because you don't have 3 to 5 weeks like Sears may have had. You don't have 3 to 5 days like you may have had 20 years ago. You know, today you may have 2 to 3 hours.
Let me kind of throw a concept out, because this is how I've been trying to understand it in my head. If you're talking about speed and getting it into the customer's hands, people would, and this is, say, 19th century Sears catalog. You could buy something at a Sears catalog, and when you say visibility, you would most likely go to a, well, they didn't have five and dimes then, but a merchandise store, a general goods store, and they would have a book, a catalog, and you would go and order it. You might take a wagon ride or a horse ride that might take you a couple of hours from your ranch to the town. You would order it from the catalog, and it would take about a month before it came. But the visibility was the general goods store and was the catalog. Then, now if you update things to today's day and age, visibility could be a lot of things. Visibility could be internet. But as it relates to the retail real estate, retailers open stores close to the end user to create that visibility. Now that's getting kind of blurred, isn't it? Because that's not the only way for visibility, and it's not the only way for delivery, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you know, I think you raise a great point. You know, the great point is, you know, what product, what types of products, what size of products, what shapes of products do we as consumers like to, you know, feel, touch, and, you know, which ones do we have to interact with before we purchase it? And I think that's what all of our retail clients are still, everybody's still trying to figure out is, what is that mix of where you still have to have that intimate customer experience, and they have to have that showroom where they have to feel, touch, and get a sense of, what that experience is with that product. We're not seeing that go away, but we're seeing some clients make the decision on which inventory do they have to have at that retail location, which ones don't they have to have, and can they get it to you in a different way?
I think that's absolutely right. And all of that is morphing, and we will discuss that a little bit more in the future. But right now we're talking about the backbone, logistics, and when we come back from hearing from our sponsors, we'll be going into some of the current strategies, the changes in strategies, where the product is being delivered that we're beginning to see, such as lockers, etc., and this is something you and I had been talking about briefly. So why don't we take a break for the moment?
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Via email to questions@creradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
I am really glad to have you with us today. Before the break, we were talking about retail logistics and getting products to customers. And in specific, we wanted to get into the idea of what kind of strategies are we morphing into today. So why don't we, you had mentioned to me this locker concept. Chris, why don't you tell me about that? Because I'm not familiar with that at all.
It's similar to what I just mentioned, is the customer experience. I think the e-tailers are recognizing, the same day, situation, and they're realizing that, their prior commitments to the customer were next day or 2 day. And so the e-tailer, as the bricks and mortar retailers are beginning to commit on certain SKUs and products on same day, they're saying, well, how do I get my product to the next day? So many of them are setting up different, what I'd call local distribution points via lockers, via other ways that they're putting their product closer to the population densities. And in those locker formats, they're placing inventory on select SKUs where then customers can come to that convenient location, whether it's a convenience store or it's another location where there's high traffic patterns, where people can then come and pick up that product rather than shipping it directly to their home. And so it's just an alternative way to access and touch a customer and get product into them on a same-day format.
So when you say lockers, are we talking about lockers in a particular retail location that the retailer or e-tailer has? And is that different from just going to a store and picking it up? Could you give us an example?
Yeah, I mean, it could be very similar to, you know, your red box, you know, the red box example of, you know, picking up a movie, you know, at your, you know, local gas station. You know, so the lockers, you know, you'll come in, you'll have a code, they'll tell you a locker number and a code, you'll come in, you'll punch in your code, your four-digit code, and, you know, you'll open up the locker and you have a locker number code, you'll, you know, pull the item out. And so, you know, creating different drop spots for those lockers for you to be able to come in and do that, you know, in a traffic pattern that, you know, they're predicting that you and types of consumers like you that are, you know, high traffic buyers of their type of product, you know, are going to likely be in that pattern to purchase.
What about grocery? And I hadn't really thought of this before, but do you think that might have make any sense in grocery?
Well, we're seeing it. You know, I was just over in Europe, you know, on sort of this, the global portfolio that we have and we're responsible for. You're seeing different trends on the retail e-commerce happen faster in different regions of the world. So over in the United Kingdom and over in, you know, Western Europe, you're seeing grocery take off in a much different way than you're seeing it in the States. And so in grocery, you know, you're seeing much more growth of the, you know, placing the orders on the phone and then the grocer hand-picking the orders and you swinging by for the pickup. You know, we're not seeing that much in the States. And you're also seeing, you know, the reverse where you're placing that order and it's getting delivered to you. So you're seeing a lot of that growth, you know, of that, you know, what was, you know, being done, you know, back a decade ago in the major markets a little bit here in the States, you know, that's really taken off in the UK and some of the major markets in Western Europe, you know, in much greater demand right now than we're seeing here in the States.
So you could either on the phone or online order your food or maybe even having standard orders to a grocery, and you could go in and there'd be a locker or a large locker that they may have in the back, and you go in and just punch your number, and when you punch in your number, it's paid for, and whammo, out comes all of your groceries prepackaged, so you're not spending
Correct.
Any time looking for it. That's a great time saver. Yeah.
Yes. And that's why it's continuing to grow. And, you know, similar to our, you know, my earlier comment on changing footprint of retail stores, you know, with, you know, more logistics taking up more space, you know, as that pickup business at the grocery store takes up more space, you know, you have to allocate more room for picking those orders, more room for staging that type of pickup, more, you know, more convenience for the customer coming by that. You know, so you're seeing, you know, massive retrofits of, you know, grocery stores in Western Europe as well as in the UK to accommodate that type of demand.
Do you see those kind of changes coming to the United States?
Eventually, you know, that's a change in, you know, that's just a change in consumer shopping patterns and buying habits. So, you know, I think it's an evolution. You know, I've got four kids, and I think my wife still prefers to get away for that hour, so she doesn't want a quick pickup. She doesn't want the quick pickup, so she's going to take that hour and go.
You know, that is an interesting comment because my wife does the same thing. She works out of the house, and she likes to drop the kids off at school, and I'm going, just put them on the bus. You know, strap him to the bus if you have to. You know, why are you going through all this effort? And what it is she drops off the kids, and then she's out of the house, and she's doing grocery shop. I think she likes the experience of grocery shopping, which is a word that you've been hearing a lot of lately. But it's that experience. I think she likes doing that. Just getting out of the house is an experience.
You're right. Yeah. And that's, you know, some things in some markets, in some of those, how some of those cultures are built, you know, some of those things may not change despite the technology, despite the evolution of shopping trends. Some of those things may not change.
So let's take a moment for a few words from our beloved sponsors. Why don't you stay with us? And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the delivery method of having the product shipped to a brick and mortar store and the advantages and disadvantages and the issues relating to that. Because I happen to be using that for certain products more and more and more. So why don't we hear from our sponsors and we'll be right back.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. TacticsMagazine.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at CREradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Thanks for being with us today. We're speaking with Chris Bjornson. Now, Chris, let me give you an example of where I've kind of morphed a little bit of my shopping habits. My wife for my birthday wanted to buy me some suits. And actually, I did this about 2 years ago also. We went online, totally researched the purchase of two suits. It's a little bit of guesswork because I've been losing weight and I wasn't sure what size. Before we went online, I went to the location, a men's warehouse, and I tried on a couple of suits to get an idea of the correct size. We then ordered it and the suits were delivered to the store. I went to the store. They altered it right there for me. I haven't picked them up yet. And the shopping experience was really good, really convenient. I knew that I didn't have to pay for it if I didn't like it. And while I was there, I bought some more shirts. And to me, the idea of going to the store gets people to spend more money. And I love that concept. I don't like it so much from a consumer perspective, but I admire that from the retailer's perspective. Well, where else are you seeing something like that?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I think about all retailers are having that same kind of philosophy. I think majority of our retailers, we've seen them thin out, you know, their what I'd call their SKU count, their stock keeping units.
They've
thinned down the inventory level that they're keeping at the store. So they're not keeping as much inventory at the store level. So did you shop online? You shopped online for that, correct?
Mm-hmm.
For your suit?
Yes.
You shopped online for your suit, and then they custom built it offline, shipped it to the store closest to you. And then they had their assortment of other accessory items when you got to the store for you to buy, plus the suit that they could alter, you know, that you got there. And so we're seeing more and more retailers. So they didn't have the whole inventory of every different type of, you know, length and width of suit stocked into your local store is what I'm saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're seeing in a general sense, And this is the other thing that's contributing to, let's say, 20 to 30% of the retail stores having, you know, excess space, is that people have been thinning out their inventory levels because you, the consumer, are shopping online just like you did for that suit. And so you're shopping online for something. You're coming to the store to then acquire what may have been sent to that store. Then you're just buying the accessories or something else you may have seen at the store. And so the store footprint is shrinking, creating, in some cases, creating space for, you know, what I'm calling the fulfillment side or logistics fulfillment side, you know, as it relates to other retailers to do some of the other same-day shipping and other things that the new economy is creating opportunities for.
Well, it may not just be shifting. It could be reduction in the total footprint, which a
it
lot of
be.
The...
It can be.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of that. So a benefit to the retailer might be reduced real estate costs, energy costs.
Yes.
Yes. What are some of the other benefits?
More productive inventory. I mean, the retailers are being more productive with their inventory. Inventory is cash to a retailer, so they're certainly getting a better, you know, cash on cash cycle. You know, as they're more productive and putting better inventory, less inventory, and turning the inventory quicker on a more predictable basis at the store level. And that's, you know, helping them control their supply chain and the cycle, you know, of the supply chain to you, the consumer, on a much more predictable basis.
You used the word visibility before. Now, I don't know that it improves visibility, but because you have more visibility online, perhaps that allows you to reduce the visibility in store. As a matter of fact, you may be increasing your visibility far more by having it online. Wouldn't that be the case?
Yeah, you can. You know, it's all, you know, a lot of the investment, you know, a lot of the investment everybody's making is in technology. The terminology a lot of retailers are using is liquid inventory. You know, how can I create a liquid inventory position where not just you, the consumer, but where the company can understand where that piece of or that suit may be anywhere in their system, whether it's still, you know, at the manufacturer, whether it's en route from the manufacturer, you know, to the distribution center, whether it's en route from the distribution center to a store, whether it's, you know, en route from a distribution center to a consumer. Where does all my inventory sit at one time? How liquid is that inventory to get it to a demand point, no matter where the demand point actually is? And so that's the terminology that's been going around lately. And it's really to serve you, the customer. You know, how can I get it to you, the customer, no matter how you want to get it to you?
Let's talk a little bit about some of the key factors, this was a perfect segue, because you're talking about, you know, the inventory and where it shifts, and my first note here is to talk about visibility, which we've been mentioning, and I'd like to give you another example of a recent shopping experience that I found unique. We, after 20 years, our built-in refrigerator finally died. And so we had to go out shopping for a new fridge. And lo and behold, we got the shock of our lives because a built-in cost anywhere from $6,000 to $17,000. And so we started looking around. We went to Lowe's because we knew that we could look at a lot of inventory there. Because frankly, for us, looking at a refrigerator online is not looking at a refrigerator in person. So at a center near us, we went to Lowe's, and then we went to, they had a smaller Sears, kind of like a mini Sears. But I would say out of probably 20% of the showroom, 25% of the showroom was refrigerators. And that said something to me, particularly in terms of visibility. Because it seemed to me they made a conscious decision as to, since they were limited in terms of their footprint, the products that needed the most visibility, that would move the most, in that location were the ones that they were going to put in the showroom, almost like a shelf space concept. Are you seeing that happening? I mean, is everybody being that intelligent?
Some people are. Yeah, in that case, it could have been a Sears outlet. So that could have been
a situation.
Yeah, it could have been a situation where that, you know, they had 10 of those refrigerators at the Lowe's store. The one of them got a little dinged. It got sent to a Sears recycling center. It got recycled and put into the Sears outlet, one of the 50 at the Sears outlet, and you walked in there and bought it for 20% less.
I mean, yeah. No, I don't know.
I mean, that could have been it. I mean, it creates the visibility, and those things have a different price point just because it's a slightly altered product.
I think you
But to the consumer, it's presented a little differently.
Yeah, no, it wasn't an outlet. It wasn't a discount. It was just a smaller footprint Sears.
Yeah.
And, we weren't looking, we weren't looking to spend the most money. We were looking to spend the least amount of money for what we needed under the circumstances. But what impressed me was how much of the footprint was used for this particular product. And that's what surprised me. Obviously it was shipped to us. We didn't buy it there. For other reasons.
Yeah. Well, you're seeing the retailers, especially that Sears outlet, they're more focused retailers handling larger white goods and just specializing in smaller niches. And so on those examples, you see less SKUs, more of them in a smaller footprint. And, that's the example you saw there at a better price point.
I'm not sure if the price point was better and it wasn't good enough for us to buy there. Unfortunately for
them. It should have been.
Well, again, I don't really know that, as I said, we purchased somewhere else for other factors. Listen, we will be right back with you, Chris, at which time we're going to talk about liquidity right here on CRE Radio.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's prospectnow.com.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers, for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockscre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. Log on to blockscre.com.
For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio. Via email to questions@creradio.com or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
We're discussing logistics, the backbone of retail real estate. And when we last left, Chris and I were talking about the key factors of logistics, and we start out with inventory and visibility. And now I'd like to talk a little bit about liquidity. But before I do, Chris, logistics for you, is not it just about getting it from the retailer, basically getting the product out to the consumer? It's getting it from the manufacturer, correct?
Correct.
So liquidity is probably more of the getting it into the hands of the consumer rather than getting it from the manufacturer, right?
Right.
Well, good, because you could have said I was wrong.
Yeah, so, you know, every one of our retail clients are, you hear the word omni-channel, and their definition of that is, how can I serve my customer in a seamless manner? And some of those seamless manners means how can I get it from the manufacturer of the product directly to the consumer, even without touching me, the retailer. Other ways, they have to bring it through their systems, meaning their distribution and fulfillment centers. Sometimes they have to go through their distribution fulfillment to their retail stores. But, right now the commitment really is the omni-channel commitment is from the retail perspective is I really don't care as long as I'm satisfying my customer on how they want to receive product.
Well, now, when we're talking about logistics for you, the conclusions and recommendations in your analysis may vary from a brick and mortar to an online e-tailer. It's still logistics to you, and you deal with both e-tailers, retailers, and a combination of both, correct?
Correct.
So a lot of what we're talking about today really isn't just brick and mortar. I think it kind of sounds like it's just brick and mortar, but you just made a perfect example. A e-tailer who is exclusively online, it never touches their hands, does it?
No. I mean, some of those e-tailers, have fulfillment centers, so they may take possession of the product if they're just not, managing a website. So they may have a fulfillment center that they warehouse the product in. Other ones are just, simply operating an e-commerce site. And, they may have a third-party logistics service provider that's providing transportation as well as warehousing of the product, depending on how that organization's set up.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the factors of liquidity. These factors are very interesting to me, because it's not so much what the factors are, but in the order that you first consider them. So let's talk about those factors and the order that you consider them and why.
When you're discussing that, are you talking about, when we talk about our location selection process that we're taking some of these clients through and when they're thinking about making real estate decisions for these type of e-commerce or omni-channel facilities?
Well, when we discussed this a couple of days ago, we talked about what are the key factors that you first consider. And you consider number one on your list is inventory. And as part of inventory, mm-hmm. you considered visibility and liquidity. So it would be A, getting the product into the customer's hands, transportation costs, workforce, tax structure, other factors. I'm giving you softballs right now. Other factors.
So in that process, we're helping them identify where to put facilities, establish a network to support their customer base. So as you mentioned, the drivers of that, are really what's the transportation model that's driven first by outbound transportation. As you started out the show, really, does someone want it next month, like the Sears catalog order? Do they want it same day? That type of service expectation dictates the transportation model that you have to set up the infrastructure on. So outbound transportation is the number one driver, followed by how much inventory you're going to carry to service that customer, followed by the inbound transportation. Where is it coming from? One of the things that we talked about is really when you say inbound, what do you mean? Is it coming in by a truck? Is it coming in from Asia overseas? Is it coming in by train? How many of the clients are using intermodal today? We talked a little bit about the green logistics. What's the sustainable impact of bringing, freight in intermodal and how many clients are doing that? Which all of our clients are considering how to reduce their carbon footprint and how to do we do more things on rail and more things intermodal.
Well, how is rail? How big is rail in the decision making process?
On the inbound side only. Only on the import inbound side into a facility. So, it's much farther down the list. You know, as we're considering these type of fulfillment e-commerce facilities.
Well, while it's further down the list and it's only on inbound, because obviously it would be difficult to get to the consumer's doorstep by rail, because rails only goes to some certain places. But,
correct.
You know, in 50, 60, 70 years ago, rail was extremely important. How important is it in today's day and age on the inbound consideration?
It's very important. So it's rare to see, many clients that are moving, full truckloads, over 500 miles, not to have rail as part of the consideration. We're seeing the majority of the clients with anything in those long moves using rail on an intermodal basis primarily, coming off the ports and into somewhere in the center of the U.S. That's the primary way they're trying to do it.
What about to a main...
Especially the retailers.
What about to a main distribution center? There was a time where you would be building warehouses and distribution centers right off a rail spur. Is that as significant? It's probably not as possible as it used to be.
Yeah, most people are setting up import, export, deconsolidation centers. So it's going somewhere to be broken down to go somewhere else. And so it's just not going to regional locations. It's going to a primary import, facility to be broken down and be, shipped into, other locations. But it is a thoughtful consideration of the total supply chain on how you look at it. So beyond the transportation, then we get in the workforce, and the workforce, given the demand of the omni-channel and e-commerce, the workforce is evolving as well.
Well, that's another very important factor which I've dealt with in my career, is making decisions based upon the quality and availability of the workforce. And that's what I'd like to talk about when we come back. But first, I'd like to hear from the good people who pay all of the bills around here.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond trial and error. And we've done it with some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. TECH, that's the tech. NIQUES, there you've got the Neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com. The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. IREM delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. IREM serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can IREM help you? To count the ways, log on to IREM Orange County. That's IREMOC.org. Learn more today. For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Welcome back to our discussion of retail logistics and getting product to consumers. And that is as it relates to retail real estate. When we last left off, we were talking about the key factors in making the decision of what real estate is important, or deciding on the correct piece of real estate. And we had last left off with transportation costs. We're talking about ingress and egress. And then we started the discussion of workforce. Why don't you tell me what you really what you consider when you talk about workforce?
That's an evolving question, especially as our unemployment rate tightens up and things go. So it's went from really availability and cost. Used to be, is there available workforce and what's the cost of the workforce? Was the questions. Now, really, what the analysis is, it's really is what's the quality of the workforce? And then, as we get into what's the predictive analytics of the workforce, where's the workforce going to go? When you need workforce a year from now or when you have seasonal spikes, where do you get workforce from? So what's the underemployment of the workforce? How do you entice a workforce that's not there to be a workforce when you have seasonal spikes where you have growth in your business? So it's really a very analytical game right now on how do you attract and create a workforce when technically, some of these workforces are drying up.
You had talked also about tax structure. I'm not sure how tax structure comes into your consideration of location of real estate.
Well, from an e-tailer basis, the tax structure was really a sales tax avoidance basis. So the e-tailer was trying to avoid the sales tax and use sales tax avoidance and free shipping as sort of the differentiation of their product. Now with the Federal Sales Tax Act, Fair Sales Tax, Federal Fairness Act coming out to be in 2015, people are moving into other ways to look at tax incentives. And so if we get to a federal sales tax in the next coming years, people have to step back and say, what else do I have to compete on? And, so everybody's looking back into what's the underlying tax structure of a state? What are the tax incentives for job creation? What's the tax incentives for real and personal property investment? And, how does my business now look in a given state or a given community?
Well, that's going to be an interesting conversation, particularly later on. We're going to address this issue as to how e-tailers are looking to change their operations to, surprisingly enough, better compete with brick-and-mortar retailers. Let's move on to some of the other factors and considerations. Here's one, and this is where we finally get to. The real estate components. What are the real estate components that you pay attention to that fall within your analysis?
The real estate components is, the different things we're looking at that are going into these new e-commerce type facilities.
Well, e-commerce or any kind of distribution facility, part of the logistical chain. Because you had mentioned a bunch of other factors, and then you also include other cost factors, the real estate.
Yeah, a lot of the real estate cost, factors as we get to the site, just getting to the site, creates a whole different set of issues. These sites typically, I say the 3X factor. Majority of these sites are 3X times the building. So if traditionally retail distribution buildings were 500,000 square feet, these new omni-channel buildings, e-commerce buildings, are 1.5 million square feet. If there's 500 employee parkings, there's, often employee parking for 1,500 people. So we're seeing a 2 to 3X factor across all the different variables on these buildings. Clear heights of the buildings are 40 feet typically versus a 32-foot clear height building. We're seeing larger depths. We're seeing all these buildings to more of a supercharged building than we've seen in the past. And so it impacts, everything around, in and around those facilities that are being located throughout the country.
We've got to take a break for a few moments. When we come back, I want to get to one of the key elements of this discussion, which is what drives what. do logistics drive the real estate, or does the real estate drive the logistics? So hold on and don't forget to come back.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com. For questions, feedback, or topics you'd like to hear about, you can reach us on our website. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619 area 393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue.
And we are back with Chris Bjornson, and we are going to now talk about who drives what, and we're not talking about Packards. Chris, we had just gotten finished talking about various consideration or factors that you think about in terms of logistics. Where does, in the hierarchy of things, where does the real estate come into play?
You know, real estate as it relates into, you know, the retail e-commerce distribution real estate's fifth, sixth on the list. You know, often we go through these projects and, you know, it's the last thing we discuss after transportation and the inventory strategy, workforce, you know, tax structures, incentives. You know, there's a lot of other factors that drive the business decision on how they're going to, you know, serve the stores, serve the customers, you know, before the real estate gets even involved. And so real estate's pretty far down on that depth chart, you know, before we get to it.
Location is important because when you're talking about liquidity and you're talking about omni-channel, where product may be going to stores, you really want to be able to get product from a distribution center to the stores pretty quickly, correct?
Yeah.
So location is still important, but as we get more into omni-channel and more of the e-tailer concept, location is no longer necessarily the strongest mantra of real estate. And let me delve into some of my thought and ask you for your comments. As I perceive it, when everything was a retail brick and mortar, retailers put their locations where the consumer was. And a retail location probably had as much to do with visibility, if not more, than anything else. Would you agree with that?
Agreed.
So as we go into an omni-channel, that visibility in the retail location isn't as important. So the distribution center is not quite as important. And the logistics becomes more important. So all of a sudden now it's no longer location, 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 but Chris Bjornson becomes much more important. You're supposed to say...
Agreed.
Chris, you're supposed to say yes.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He becomes so important.
Now, you know, it's you know, after 20 years in this business, the one thing that you clearly see is that there is significantly more logistics in a retail real estate store today, and there's significantly more retail opportunity in a logistics industrial distribution real estate building today. And so you see that evolution going both ways. And I see that opportunity evolving certainly at the retail center, and you see those changing dynamics right before your eyes in any retail center you walk into. And you see, not everybody, has the same perspective that I have, but you can see that same thing evolving at the distribution center in the backbone. If you can walk into the backbone like I walk into the backbone, they're getting the same returns. They have the same issues that's going on. There's no reason that same outlet opportunity and that same sort of mock showroom opportunity can't happen at the distribution center that it does at the retail store.
Yeah, and that's one of the...
We're just not used to doing it, but those patterns can shift and change. Retail stores aren't used to having 3 to 4 dock doors on it either. But I see that pattern shifting and changing too as people start picking up more and the store starts delivering more.
I'm going to get to that right after I ask you this question. What's the difference between omnichannel and multi-channel?
Omnichannel is the seamless customer experience. Multi-channel is the retailer's decision to push product through one of the channels. Omnichannel is about your decision. Multi-channel is about the retailer's decision.
I'm glad you explained that. I understand that much better right now. So let's go back now. Let's talk about what you had just addressed was perhaps some of the new trends that we're seeing, how these changes are affecting the footprint of a retailer. Well, you had just mentioned all of a sudden having loading doors. What are you seeing in that fashion? And then we can talk a little bit about what I had mentioned before was a cluster of industrial warehouse buildings, perhaps serving, and what e-tailers are doing and changing. So what are you seeing in terms of, let's talk about the footprint.
Well, the footprint, the retail footprint's already been, being reduced, as we spoke about earlier, with the inventory rationalization that's going on, within the retail store. So that's that 20 to 30% vacancy. So that space is already sitting in that retail store. The question is, can it be repurposed or reutilized? And can it be repurposed or reutilized for creating, the pickup version or any outbound distribution from a store location outbound to a customer. So that's could be and is in some cases the next evolution in how the store can be utilized. Majority of the stores aren't set up for that right now.
Well, you had given me some percentages, and I'm looking for them right now. Oh, 85% retail and 15% logistics or fulfillment and other operations. I'm not sure if those numbers reflect what is typical of today or where you see them going. I think you were talking about, in many instances, we're going to start seeing maybe 70% retail and 30% logistics.
I think we can. I think that's how that evolution can get there. I think that's what the future state can be. That'll be at a skinny down version. That'll be the skinny version will be the 70-30. But with that, you'll see the evolution of having a couple more dock doors at the back and, a little more, ingress-egress radius, for a different type of truck, at the back of the retail centers.
Well, that raises a whole bunch of other issues. However, mm-hmm. one of the things I read it within the last year about either how Target, Walmart, or Kmart or something how they have, in order to facilitate same-day delivery, they were going to start using some of their retail locations as a distribution center. And isn't that part of what you're talking about? Maybe you'll actually see, for instance, if Target wants to, or Walmart wants to expand on its online same-day delivery, they have really local distribution centers close to the consumer, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and that's where we go back to that concept of liquid inventory. You know, if they know the inventory is at that store and that's the easiest place to get it, that's the closest and cheapest place to get it to that customer that's closest to that store. You know, that's where some of these concepts you read in the paper where, hey, you know, can your trusted neighbor bring that product to you if they're at the store at that point in time? You know, somehow do you know that trusted neighbor's mobile device, and can that person be the driver, the delivery person for your product just down the street? You know, or do you have to make a special shipment and bring out one truck to your whole neighborhood and do a bunch of multi-stop drops? Mm. You know, they're experimenting with all those things.
In our earlier conversation, I thought that Costco was a perfect opportunity to try that concept out, because in essence, they are warehouse. They start out as a warehouse. They're warehouse acting as retail, and maybe they should start acting a little bit more as warehouse and distribution, because I constantly get emails from them as to the kind of things I can order online. And they can do same day delivery if they have those items in stock in a local Costco. But what are, taking Costco as an example, what are some of the challenges that Costco would have in doing a same day delivery system?
Well, you know, I think a lot of Costcos are in prime high traffic retail locations. So, you know, some of that model, you know, I think that they're in great locations. So some of that challenge is just, as you said, ingress and egress challenges based on what the volume is. You know, the good news or the best model at Costco is I don't see anybody going to Costco in a small car. Everybody's going to Costco in a pretty big, including my wife and her Suburban. I mean, they're packing big trucks going into
Chris,
Costco.
Chris, I feel sorry for you. You have one child and your wife drives a Suburban. That means she's going to fill up the Suburban.
She's got room for another delivery.
Well, maybe she can make money doing the delivery, work a deal out with the e-tailers. Well, you've probably already...
She could.
You've already figured out the logistics.
For some free gas, she could
there
get it done.
There you go.
You're right.
Listen, this is CRE Radio. We'll return after this break, at which time we're going to talk a little bit about... you know, a couple of other final factors, and then wrap up the show.
Manage a shopping center? Always looking for new ideas? Tactics. Tactics Magazine is the idea magazine for shopping center marketing directors all over the world. Exciting promotions, gift with purchase programs, and full-blown ad campaigns. Every edition of Tactics is packed with features, ideas, and news you can use to get the word out and grow your numbers. How can you manage a shopping center without your tactics? Log on to tacticsmagazine.com. Today would be good. Tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to prospectnow.com and enter the promotion code Howard.
That's prospectnow.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or via email to questions@CREradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio with our guest, Chris Bjornson. And now I want to talk about same-day delivery, which is this whole new concept, and I don't quite fully understand how that's going to be accomplished in a financially feasible fashion. So Chris, why don't we talk about, and this can apply to both brick and mortar, but I think predominantly we're talking about e-tailers. Before we actually start that, you had mentioned something to me, and I think this definitely relates to it, that e-tailers are focused on the customer experience. Now, I've heard experience being used primarily for brick and mortar. What do you mean, and in what way are e-tailers looking for that customer experience, and why?
Well, you know, I think the realization, whether it's through the, you know, the federal, you know, sales tax, or saying, you know, at some point in time in the near future, everybody's going to have to compete on service. And if we have to compete on service, we have to find a way to interact with our customers. And so if competing on service means same day instead of next day, and if that means we have to get something to the customers in the same day, we have to find other ways to interact with the customer. So that could be via a pop-up store. It could be via some other kind of high-end showroom. It could be through the lockers we talked about. It could be through what other venue can we have an interaction and a brand affiliation, you know, through us, the e-tailer, with the customer. And so we're seeing an evolution of traditional e-tailers to set up, you know, some of these unique experiences that the customer can relate to that e-tailer and grow with them in some way, shape, or form.
What are some of the challenges facing the e-tailers to actually pull off this same-day delivery?
Well, I think it comes down to just continued investment. I mean, you're having to make now investment, even if it's just in quasi-bricks and mortar, you're continuing to make an investment and, you know, trying to extend your brand into that customer. And, you know, what's the return on that investment? So the bricks and mortar, the advantage the bricks and mortar retailers have is, right or wrong, they're already over-invested. And so, you know, there's lots of different ways they can address the same day or change their service proposition or improve their service proposition to their customer base. So, you know, it's the investment model. What's the investment model going to look like going forward, and what's that service model going to look
like?
So
isn't location then important? Because the further away you are from the customer, the greater the transportation cost?
Yeah, in my opinion, eventually all of that stuff will be transparent, and transportation costs are real costs, you know, and if you don't have the buying power and you can't keep absorbing the transportation cost, it becomes a real issue on the return on investment model. It's, you have to be very unique. You have, as an e-tailer, you have to continue to have a unique brand at a price point that demands a premium, and to deliver that, you know, unique service to the customer. I mean, those are the ones that are continue to be differentiated, in my opinion, in the marketplace.
I think I read yesterday or the day before that Amazon is actually, I'm not sure if it was Amazon or eBay, but it seems to make more sense that it was Amazon, is actually, they started a trial program in the San Francisco Bay Area for same-day delivery, and they're expanding that not only from the San Francisco Bay Area down to San Jose. That seems to be a pretty large area that they're extending their same-day delivery. Is it not?
I'm sure it's on select SKUs, and I'm sure it's on SKUs that they have in stock and in control, and they're doing it in a controlled area. So, I would not imagine if it's either of those companies that they're stretching that commitment, because both of them want to keep a high service rating on their commitments to the customer. So, to me, sitting in Chicago, it may seem like a stretch of a service area, but I would not think that either of them would be making a stretch on a service commitment, you know, at this stage in the game on same day.
You sound so much like a retailer. You use the word skew. Skew. For anybody out there who's not a retailer, skew means a product. Isn't it a product type? Or a product category?
Stock keeping unit. SKU, stock keeping unit. You're right, Howard.
Well, that's great. So
that's a good happy hour question.
Or on, was it, on Jeopardy. That would be a good Jeopardy question.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's the most significant thing that a real estate broker should take away from this show? The single most important thing.
You know, I think, you know, it's shocking, but, you know, all the implementation and different changes we're talking about, you know, I think what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of these things are still being studied by all of the retailers. You know, implementation's happening, changes are happening, but I still would say 7 out of 10 retailers are still studying and trying to identify and understand what their commitment to the customer is going to look like and what's that real estate portfolio, what's their, as we call, what's the 2020 vision really going to be. And 7 out of 10 of those retailers are still working on it. So I just, you know, if I would give anybody advice, is expect continued change. What I said on the phone today, I would expect continued change and expect that maybe change even greater than, you know, what have I projected. Because I don't think I'd even made the projections I made today a year ago. I think it's changing that fast.
Mm. One of the things that this show does for me is it's a constant and continuing learning experience. And the one thing that I'm taking away from this show in my earlier conversations with you is that if there's a real estate broker who deals in retail, don't just think real estate. You really have to understand how the decisions are made and what the effect of logistics are on the decision, because that would be so much more helpful to the retailer, who often thinks, to a great extent, logistics first, and then they approach the real estate, which is how you do it, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I'd like to really thank you for your participation in the show. Too bad we couldn't film it as we did at Recon. You're a great guy and very informative, and you're my guy to help me out with anything having to do with logistics, and I hope that you keep me informed on everything relating to that. Your contact information can be found on our website. You're with Jones Lang LaSalle, or JLL. Do you have any speaking engagements or appearances coming up in the near future?
I'm sure I do, but I don't have my calendar in front of me, Howard. I was focused on our interactive discussion, so I will keep you posted if I do.
No, we'll wait. You know, I'll sing to the audience while you go look for it. No, I'm teasing you. Okay, so let me just kind of start wrapping up the show. I want to mention to everybody our last show, which was a very popular show with, and I'm going to start with Michael Legazzo because I had neglected to mention him on LinkedIn yesterday, Bobby Reuter, Bo Barron, and Sarah Malcolm. We did that show, and the interesting thing was today I got a call from Linda Day Harrison at the broker list, who I had, I had met her through LinkedIn, and we tweet with each other, and she had some suggestions for me with regard to our website, and she had written a very interesting article about blogs and the 10 most important things that you had. So she had a suggestion for me, and it was a great suggestion. I also want to mention, talking about social media, I met Alan Buchanan, who is an industrial broker down in San Diego, through Twitter, and we had lunch yesterday, and he gave me some phenomenal ideas. As a matter of fact, I have now been invited to cover and do some interviews at the Lee & Associates Summit in Las Vegas in the middle of October. So I will be there. And let's talk a little bit about our upcoming shows. This is a great show. We've worked with some really good real estate PR people, and we're going to have a show on October 4th as to why CRE professionals should use PR firms. We're also going to do a show, I believe it is on October 11th, New Age New Age Prospecting for Brokers with Alan Buchanan, speak of the devil. Then we're doing a great interview with David Henry on November 1st. David is the CEO of Kimco, and he is one of our icons of real estate. That's the top of the game. And we're going to be talking about what icons of real estate is really about, what motivates someone like him to lead and be a leader of an organization such as Kimco. And if you've never met David, he's just like such a normal, great guy. I'm really looking forward to that. We're also doing a show, The 3 P's of Listings with Bo Barron. And finally, we're going to do a show. We have many more, but I do want to mention a show that we're going to be doing on Leeds, Energy Star, and Gresby with David Pogue. That's going to be a really educational show having to do with green buildings and sustainability. So with that being said, Chris, I'd like to thank you very much for being on the show. You've been a great guest, and we will be talking soon.
Great. Thank you, Howard. Appreciate the opportunity to be on
great.
The show.
And
have a great
you
weekend.
Too, and let's take it away.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com. or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio, via email to questions@CREradio.com, or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.